Good morning, everyone, and welcome to FPC Radio Live on Friday, November the 18th, 2022. And guess what, folks? As of right now, Twitter is still alive. Unfortunately, though, John, I think the Packers playoff hopes are more than dead. Can you get more than dead? Can you get double dead? Because I think what we saw last night only kind of further emphasized what, you know, we were kind of thinking after that Cowboys win. I think it was a nice come-from-behind win, but I didn't buy it for them long-term, and that kind of played out last night.
Oh, no, they're dead. And, you know, unlike other seasons, the season ended before Thanksgiving as opposed to shortly after Martin Luther King Day. So there is that, so I can kind of enjoy the rest of the football season without any stress. I did like the uniforms last night. I thought they were gorgeous. The all-white uniforms with the green and yellow, beautiful uniforms. So there was that takeaway that was positive. Other than that, it was a stinker. And my quarterback was horrible in the fourth quarter when he had ample chances to get his team back in the game. But that's been the story this season. Ian, do you realize the Packers over the last 13 games, last two last year, and of course this season, they're 4-9 over their last 13 games. That's horrible. I mean, yeah. The Detroit Lions have been better over their last 13 games than the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, no, look, we're not going to sugarcoat it here. I think we've both fairly given Rodgers the benefit of the doubt just because, again, I mean, he's done a lot of great things in this league. And, yeah, like when, you know, you said it, I'm not trying to pile on, but you said, you know, he had ample opportunity in the fourth quarter, yada, yada, yada. That sounds kind of what sums up his career. I mean, look, we sit here and we defend him quite a bit, and rightfully so, because, you know, my philosophy is that the whole way we view quarterbacks is so ass backwards and unforgiving, really. Like, I mean, we're at a point now where, like, I think it's going to take a little bit of time for us to kind of reestablish some solid footing when it comes to evaluating what a great quarterback is, because there's no doubt about it. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. His biggest flaw is the thing that's kept him from winning and going to more Super Bowls. And that is sometimes when the pressure is on and you're in a must win situation, he comes up short. And look, we've kind of in a way jokingly brought up the, oh, he's 1-32 against teams, you know, trailing by at least 1 point if the team's over five, you know, some ridiculous stat like that. And we all kind of sit there and laugh and chuckle, but every single time the opportunity comes up, John, seems to come up short.
Well, I mean, just 5 days ago, he did come from behind 2 touchdowns to beat the Cowboys.
Exactly.
But I mean, I think as far as the piling on thing, I think he deserves a lot of it. I mean, most of the shortcomings come in the NFC Championship game. In the regular season, he's been aces generally in November on a Thursday night.
That falls into the parameters, right? Though, when the light's
well,
the
that's
brightest.
The biggest
and,
parameter.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So,
but in terms of primetime, that was the first primetime loss by the Packers. Well, they lost to Buffalo earlier this year, but they had this incredible run of winning, you know, Thursday night games,
well,
Sunday
to be
night
fair,
games,
they,
whatever.
To be fair, they'd only play the Lions and the Bears. You know, like,
no,
of course
no,
they're going to win. I know.
This is a Colin Coward thing. The thing is, like, last year people talked about, well, their division is so weak, and they did go 13-4 last year, and they were 4-2 in their division. They were 9-2 outside the division. So, I mean, sometimes people just
that's the whole Patriots thing. Yeah, like, I mean, sit there and say, oh, they're just good in their – well, then they would probably lose outside the division, and they didn't.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know,
but as far as last night, no, I mean, they had ample chances. Tannehill throws that terrible interception. They do nothing with that. Then there's a nice punt return. I think the first positive punt return by the Packers since the Obama administration, but it puts them on the plus side of the field. They do nothing with that. He was horrible in the fourth quarter. Had Sammy Watkins wide open in midfield to, you know, move the drive along. Misses him. Misses Alan Lazard. He's not feeling the pressure correctly. I think at this point in his career, it almost feels like he's just trying to preserve his numbers. Like, if you just looked at the numbers last night, we have like a 95 passer rating, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Like, if you didn't watch the game, you'd go, well, you know, he seemed pretty good. But if you watch the game, especially in the fourth quarter, he was horrible.
Yeah.
And the thing that is really alarming is there's three faces of Aaron Rodgers. There's the PO'd Aaron Rodgers, which I like because that means he's ultra competitive. There's the happy Rodgers, which he just kind of goes out and plays at a high level. the face we saw last night was the I don't care, yeah. Rodgers. And to me, that's never good in any athlete. That's where he was last night.
Yeah, look, and that's the thing. Like, it looked – he just looked very defeated yesterday.
Yep.
And, you know, I know, you know, his personality is in stark contrast to Brady. So that's, you know, naturally you're going to get a lot of animosity between the two fan bases, you know, of one player and the other. And you know, there's silly arguments to be had on both sides. But, like, you know, you're sitting there watching him after the game and kind of the comments. Like you said, there's no relax. There's no, you know, none of this type of, you know, quiet confidence. And in turn, kind of taking the fans off the ledge, because in years past you'd kind of hear him say that and you're like, you know what, he's right. I mean, it's the Packers. They're gonna figure it out. They're gonna end up winning some games in the regular season. But more often than not, John, we're seeing them out quarterbacked, out defensed, and probably most importantly, out coached. Like, Matt LaFleur is, and this is extends to the coordinators as well. I'm pinpointing Matt LaFleur, but you know, because obviously he's the head coach and he certainly deserves some blame. But, you know, this team just doesn't look prepared.
Nope.
Every week. And that's, again, that's an indictment on coaching. I mean, you can obviously, you know, the players have a lot to do with execution and doing what's needs to be done on the field and or not doing it in this case. But the coaching has been subpar. And I think, again, I've kind of railed, so to speak, on the Sean McVay coaching tree. And it's not really the Sean McVay coaching tree, but you know what I'm referencing. Those coordinators, that group of young up-and-coming coaches, the offensive gurus, you know, to the next wave, all of which kind of seem like they're kind of teetering right now with the franchises. Well, I mean, Matt LaFleur, not so much, because, again, you know, three straight seasons of 13 wins, but I always felt that it was more of a, well, you have Aaron Rodgers, so yeah, you're going to win some games, and
Well, Zach Taylor's done pretty well with Cincinnati, right? But you have Joe Burrow as your quarterback, and give Kevin O'Connell a lot of credit.
That's the thing,
Minnesota,
John.
Minnesota is a disciple of Sean McVay, so I mean,
that's the thing, John. It's one year here, 1 year there, and I'm not saying that Zach Taylor's not going to be a really good coach. I'm just saying, like, this is what we do. We get excited over a year or two of very good coaching, and you're like, all right, these are the next guys. And then you just see him get figured out, and just it's the same cycle. That's why when we were talking about Jeff Saturday last week, it was kind of like, hey, what the hell? Why not? The traditional way of hiring coaches, you're batting about 200 right now. I mean, if you want to believe the Raiders story, I mean, Jesus. The only reason they're going to hold on to Josh McDaniels is because they can't afford to pay another coach, you know? So,
right.
So yeah, to me, I'm like, I'm not going to keeping myself from going all in, because if you would have talked to, you know, most people, what, two seasons ago or starting last year, you're like, wow, Matt LaFleur is the guy. But, like, I think you and I both have questioned at times his in-game management and some of the decisions he made. And quite frankly, like I said, I felt like he was propped up by Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And that is part of what you need to do as a coach, though, right, is get the coach to prepare the player and et cetera. So maybe during the week they're prepared, but when you get to the game, it's not quite right. You didn't like the fact that the Packers were down 2 scores with 6.5 minutes left last night, and they decided to really not put their foot to the metal and kind of move into some of a hurry-up offense with a little more urgency. I mean, they were huddling up. They were down 2 scores with 6.5 minutes left, and they huddled up, and they killed a minute and a half on their with the ball in their hands on 2 plays. Like, I mean, talk about gross clock mismanagement. Now, is that on the coach? Is that on the quarterback? I know Rodgers loves to just bleed the clock down, that every time you see the play clock, it's always in red.
Yeah, you know, like that works better when you have a lead, though.
Right, generally that's good when you have the lead. So maybe he was misreading the scoreboard. You know, he's the Stanley Kubrick of quarterbacks, and Kubrick is my favorite director of all time. But, I mean, he would have 98 takes before he got one that he thought was right. Mm-hmm. It's like, but a film director has a lot of time on his hands, unless the studio's pushing back because the budget's too big. The quarterback, there's only so much time left in the game, and then LaFleur's using all his timeouts on defense, which makes some sense, but then you have no timeouts with 5 minutes left, so you can't even challenge a play. So it's terrible mismanagement. he's a cheerleader on the sideline. He's the offensive coordinator who is just propped up to be the head coach. And you compare that to Mike Vrabel, who I think is one of the best coaches in the league. First of all, he just commands the sideline, right? I mean, any coach that looks like he could probably kick the butt of every player on his team, you know, sign me up for that guy, right? But he's the CEO coach, right? He's got a coordinator on offense, defense, special teams. He lets them coach, and he sees the game. He doesn't have this giant play sheet plastered in front of his face like every other one of these guys. I think Vrabel's one of the best in the business.
He's Dan Campbell, but he's good, you know?
But he's good, exactly. Yeah. He's incredibly smart, yeah.
Like, I mean,
exactly.
That's the thing.
You're right, yeah, yeah. Great point, Ian. Well, big commanding guy, but is really a great coach, too.
Yeah, and like, that's the thing. It's like people, I get, and I'm not, you know, that was not a... Like, I think Dan Campbell seems like a fine person. You know what I mean? I'm just, you know, 5-20 or whatever the hell his record is with the Lions. I mean, speaks for itself. But yeah, I mean, we've talked about this recently, just kind of the coaching dynamic in the NFL right now, where there really isn't a lot of great coaches. There's like five. And maybe Vrabel's probably in that group, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And... Yeah. You know, we look across the league, and I know, obviously, Bill Belichick is getting it a little bit, but I mean, look at other teams in similar situations, and you can see the success and what he brings to the table as a great head coach. And I mean, the biggest Brady fan in the world, probably me, but I've never bought into trying to downplay one or the other. I've always felt that it was a nice tandem, although I do believe the quarterback is the more important position because they're on the field. But at the end of the day, like, you cannot sit here and pretend like Bill Belichick isn't a great coach, certainly compared to what we see on a week-to-week basis from most, just about every other team in the league. Like, which coaches can you really trust week to week, John?
Oh, yeah, especially with clock management, how they handle timeouts, how they challenge plays. And again, they're not coaching the entire team. There has to be some connectivity between offense, defense, and special teams. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't just be, I'm the offensive play caller. Let me play, you know, call these plays regardless of what the score is. Like Green Bay last night was in some sort of offense that made no sense being down 2 scores with 6.5 minutes left. There was no urgency. There was nothing. They did that at the end of the half as well. They did it at the end of regulation against Dallas. Remember, Rodgers.
They've done it pretty much every week, John. They've had some puzzling, like, why is this your philosophy given this situation?
I mean, how many times last night did we see run, pass, and then a punt?
I thought I was watching week 1-7. Yeah.
Right. No, seriously. It's almost like, why aren't you using, I mean, again, and he played awful, especially in the fourth quarter, so I'm not taking the blame away from him, but I don't think he calls the plays unless he wants to change them at the line and supposedly got in trouble with Mike McCarthy a few years ago. I've always felt these top quarterbacks call their own plays, but that's a whole other discussion. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing really creative going on there. And then defensively, you've got the highest paid cornerback in football, Jair Alexander, who I think is really good. And you have him playing soft zone coverage on 3rd and 6 that you or I could get open 7 yards downfield and catch a ball and move the chains. I mean, Ryan Tannehill looked like an all-pro quarterback last night. Other than that one interception, he was nearly perfect, right? I mean, he was outstanding. And again, you're playing soft zone coverage on 3rd and 6 with the corners 12 yards off the line of scrimmage. Like, really? And you have the guy who I think is one of the best cornerbacks in football, and you paid him, let him play. Let him man up on one of the wide receivers and make him go somewhere else.
Well, and that, again, it all comes back to, not all, again, execution is part of it. They have not executed when given the opportunity. That's a huge issue. But again, when you're starting with one arm tied behind your back, it's not helping that much. And again, mm-hmm. I just don't have confidence in this coaching staff to out-coach anyone else. Like, you know, again, I keep going back to the Patriots, and yeah, they may not have the most talent, but even in the games that they lose, they're relatively competitive. And I think they've overachieved this year, which is a sign of really great coaching, as opposed to, you know, the Packers, who I think have greatly underachieved. And maybe this was, maybe our expectations should have, maybe we should have tempered them a little bit, because we both came into the season thinking, oh, this Green Bay Packers defense is going to be pretty good. It might not be the best unit in the league, but they're going to be pretty good. And they haven't been that. They've had moments, really good moments, but not that consistent, solid defense that we talk about. You know, you talk about Jaire Alexander, and it's like, have you really heard his name at all this season? you know?
No, no. And like, they've had a lot of injuries too on defense, but you're supposed to have depth. And they've drafted, you know, all their draft choices over the last decade in the first round have been on defense. That's what they do. They draft defense and then they try to fill in the gaps on offense. And here you are. Seven first round picks are supposed to start on defense. Now, some are injured. But it's a lot of it's a scheme. I mean, Joe Barry was the defensive coordinator on the 08 Lions that went 0-16.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it may lead you to believe that maybe he's not the right guy for the job, but he's friends with Matt LaFleur, so he's got the job.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we'll see what happens. Like I said, for the situation that they're in right now, I just don't see a easy path out. You know, in terms of being competitive this year. And on the flip side, though, you look at the Titans and you're like, how is this team as good? They're 7-1 in their last eight games.
Yeah.
And the only game they lost was an overtime loss to the Kansas City Chiefs with Malik Willis making his professional debut. Like, have we just been really just sleeping on this Titans team? Like, I might have to dive back into it a little bit, but... You know, we've talked about him recently, but to go 7-1 and to just now to start get a little bit of recognition, that tells me that maybe we've been sleeping on them a little bit. And I don't know. I mean, again, it's the Packers. I mean, it's funny that that's how we're phrasing it now. Oh, it's just the Packers, but an impressive win nonetheless.
Yeah, it's a short week, right? You had a pretty physical game against Denver last week, which was a slugfest. Denver and Tennessee was at 17-10. Tennessee, they're going to play in a lot of those low-scoring games. I don't think you have an elite quarterback. I don't think you have a very good quarterback in Tennessee, but Mike Vrabel gets the job done with Ryan Tannehill. You have Derrick Henry, and you use him, which is a great thing. They had a massive amount of injuries last night, and they were able to take care of business. Their special teams are always pretty solid. Yeah, I think he's one of the top five coaches in the sport. He's the reigning NFL coach of the year, and they were the number one seed last year. I know soft number one seed, and they lost to Cincinnati in the divisional round, mostly because Ryan Tannehill turned the ball over three times. But yeah, I think we're a little bit asleep on them because they kind of play a distinct style, Ian. Like, they don't have this wide open passing attack.
They're
like
consistent.
Kansas City or Buffalo, but they're just like the team that shows up every week and is well coached. I mean, they had two penalties last night. They generally take care of the football. They're just really, really solid. They just, I don't know. I think if you're on your best day, if you're Kansas City or Buffalo, Tennessee can't beat you, but you better be on your best day because they'll slip up and maybe pull an upset or two in the postseason.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like you talk about, you know, winning close, gritty games. I mean, that's coaching. Coaching. You have your team prepared. They're not the most talented across the board, but they're maximizing their talent week in and week out. And that's the sign of a very good team. And certainly that's not the majority in this league. I mean, you can talk about even some of the best teams aren't necessarily like that. You know what I mean? We're starting to see some cracks in Buffalo's armor. You know, I think the Chiefs, like when we gave our top five teams this week on the Full Press NFL podcast, we both had the Chiefs number one, and I think they deserve it. I mean, rightfully so, but I think that spot, that rank is tenuous at best because, you know, they have some flaws and almost lost to this team we just mentioned, Tennessee. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And I can't believe I'm saying it, but there's a big game this weekend between the Jets and the Patriots. I mean, I'm laughing saying it now, but that's the reality. Like, that's a big game right now in the AFC because – yeah, you're getting Tennessee and Kansas City and Miami are your seven win teams, but man, that tier right below, and I don't think there's a big gap. That tier right below has a lot of really good teams mixed in there. And
Question, teams that are right there on the precipice of making the playoffs. And you look at the importance of this game on Sunday, the Patriots and the Jets. If the Jets win, they're 7-3. Miami's 7-3. If Buffalo wins their game, they'll be 7-3. And the Patriots will be 5-5, two games behind everybody. But if the Patriots win this game, they'll be 6-4 like the Jets, and they'll hold a tiebreaker because they would have beaten them twice. Massive game. One more thing I just wanted to bring up about Mike Vrabel. Did you picture Mike Vrabel coaching Buffalo? How much better that team would be? Because he cleans up a lot of the nonsense, the stupid mistakes. that Buffalo still makes with, you know, the state trooper there on the sideline, Sean McDermott. Mike Vrabel does.
Bill Burr, what are you talking about?
Bill Burr or Jerry Callahan.
Actually, no, I like Bill Burr. I'm not, I love Bill Burr, actually, so I'm not going to associate them with Buffalo.
Sean McDermott looks like a guy I went to high school with. I always say, like, Sean McDermott and Mike McCarthy look like half the guys I went to high school with, you know, class of 1981. Well, that's how old I am.
Look,
but, yeah, imagine Vrabel coaching a team like Buffalo. He coached a lot of the nonsense out of them, including the quarterback who's prone to making mistakes.
Well, we talked about it on Monday. We, you know, is Buffalo buying into their own hype? And I think it is. And mm-hmm. that's I'm going to be on coaching as well, because you got to, you know, that was one of the great things and one of the reasons why the Patriots had so much success. Not, you know, the primary reason, but it was certainly a big factor, is that, you know, that humble pie. You know, don't mm-hmm. you know, take it one week at a time. I know these are all cliches, but the Patriots lived by that, and they were never too high or too low. The only time we ever saw them get a little too high on themselves was when, John? 2007. Yeah.
Yep.
And you know, that's about the only time you can probably recall this team. Now every team's going to use the, oh, we're the underdogs, we're going to talk trash. That I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, just going in not prepared, feeling yourself a little bit too much, and that's what happened. They got hit in the mouth. And I think that's kind of what Buffalo has been feeling lately. And this is where you really learn a lot about coaching. Like, a lot of coaches can look great when you have a team that no one has a lot of expectations for, but they do a lot of flashy things. So Buffalo, you know, for the last few years has, you know, have they really been outside of last year? Well, the last couple of years, I guess. But even so, the first few years under Josh Allen and Sean McDermott, it was like, oh, we don't expect them to be competitive, but they're scrappy and they're doing fun things and Josh Allen is flashy. So Sean McDermott looks like a great coach. But when they start to catch up to their success, okay, when the expectation isn't just to grow, it's to compete and win Super Bowls, all of a sudden, that's when you start to see that pressure really come down on coaching. And that's what's going to expose you one way or the other. Is Sean McDermott going to be able to handle that? Or is he going to kind of revert back to what a lot of these other coaches do, and they start to struggle? So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Buffalo.
It's a lot like golf, isn't it? I mean, you're a really good golfer. I'm god awful. I haven't golfed in years for good reason. But you know, if you're a good golfer and all of a sudden you're a bogey golfer, you shoot 90, then you move it down to 85. You're getting really good. But going from 85 to 80, if you're that type of golfer, that's a lot of work,
yeah.
Right? So Sean McDermott went in there very first year. They made the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor, a quarterback. Then they draft Josh Allen. They revert back a little bit in 2018, and then they've made the playoffs three straight years. But now to go from, okay, they're a Super Bowl contender. They made the AFC Championship game 2 years ago. Last year they lost that memorable game against Kansas City in the divisional round. Now, from there, the next step is to be a team that wins a Super Bowl. That ain't easy. I mean, we've seen that for mm-hmm. years. Look, the Green Bay Packers have been the best team in the NFC for the last dozen years. They have been. Most consistent team in the NFC the last dozen years. They haven't played in a Super Bowl since 2010.
Yeah.
You know, so to get from point A to point B is not that easy, and that, I think that's where coaching is a big, big part of that.
Since I've been watching a lot of Breaking Bad lately, I'll kind of intertwine the two. At one point in the show, there was discussion about, you know, Walt and this other scientist who was also a chemist who made some very pure meth, and it was like something like 93% pure, but. I know, like, I it's not my thing, so I'm just speaking from watching the show. But the point was Walt's illicit substance was about 5 percentage points more pure. And does it seem like a lot? No. But as the other chemist had implored his boss at the time, it's like that 5%. Means mm-hmm. more than everything else, and the difference is staggering, although the numbers don't look it. And to bring it back to everything, that's the difference between a ton of success and just always on the outside looking in. And that's the difference between great teams and non-great teams. And this is what we're going to see if Buffalo is, because it doesn't mean you can't struggle. I mean, struggles are part of the process, but how do you rebound and how do you respond from those struggles and can you overcome them and make that next step and become almost that 99% pure, as we're talking about. So, all right, let's we've done enough talking about the Packers, the Bills, and the Vikings, and all these other teams. Let's get into our picks because, we're kind of running out of time. So we'll kind of not speed through these, but just like we do every week, we're gonna go game by game and give our picks. And this week we get to start with the Detroit Lions. 2-game winning streak, John, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am trashing Dan Campbell, and he's won 2 games in a row. Yeah.
They play hard for the guy.
They do. I mean, they do. But, yeah. You know, playing hard only gets you, 6 wins now in 3 seasons. So, but anyway, Detroit at the Giants. I got New York winning this one, 7-2. I think, again, another team that's quietly one of the better teams in the league, although I'm not quite convinced that they're heading to the Super Bowl type of team, but still not a team anyone really wants to play. So give me the Giants at home.
The Giants will be the team that Tampa beats in the wild card round, right?
I like that.
In early January. Yeah, I think that's probably what's going to happen. Look, I've been picking against the Giants the last few weeks, even though before the season I was so high on them and they've really lived up to my expectations. So, you know, sometimes you kind of bet against yourself, you edge off a little bit. So I'm going to pick Detroit in an upset in this game. I just have a funny feeling that they're on a roll. They're putting points on the board, and offensively, they're pretty good. And the Giants may not be able to match firepower on the offensive end, mm-hmm. So I'll pick the Lions in an upset.
All right, next we have, I mentioned it already, big game in the AFC, and I'm not saying that kind of jokingly. The Jets at the Patriots. The Patriots just a couple weeks ago upset or beat the Jets. I like New England in this game. Again, I think their defense is really good. The Jets' defense is really good. I like the Patriots' offense a little bit better. And I still think Mac Jones is a pretty good quarterback, has to stop the bad turnovers. He does that. I think the Patriots start to win a lot more games, and I think they see the opportunity ahead of them, not only in the division but in the conference. Not to say that they're the top team in the conference, but there's an opportunity there, and I think if anything, the Patriots coaching staff, primarily Bill Belichick, will get them ready to seize that opportunity. So give me the Patriots at home.
Both teams coming off a bye. Jets feel really good about themselves after beating Buffalo. I'll just be different than you. I think it's going to be a field goal game. Either way, I'll take the Jets in this contest.
All right, next we have the Rams at New Orleans. I don't like either team really, but I gotta take the Saints just because when push comes to shove, they are playing better football, and I think the Rams are kind of a mess right now. So Saints at home.
Yeah, I'll take the Saints, too. You're right. Both of these teams are a mess, but it seems like the Saints are less of a mess than the Rams. So I'll take New Orleans as well.
Philadelphia at Indianapolis. Feel-good story with Jeff Saturday beating the Raiders and Josh McDaniels in his first game. I don't think it's going to be a feel-good story this weekend. I think Philadelphia, coming off that loss, I think they're going to respond pretty well against, you know, a team that's not that good. I mean, let's face it, they have Stephon Gilmore in the secondary. They have injuries throughout the rest of their defense, and that's about it. So give me Philadelphia.
Yeah, you got to like Philadelphia following that Monday night loss to Washington.
All right, next we have Cleveland at Buffalo in Detroit. I'm disappointed that they're not going to try to play a snow game because I love snow games. I mean, it's just, it's always fun. The aesthetic is great. The visuals are awesome. But, you know, I guess Buffalo can't handle it, even though it's the Buffalo Bills, and, you know, they tend to shrink in weather. They're kind of like Newman, you know. They don't work in the rain, the sleet, the snow, any of that. They want the perfect environment. But, no, look, I think coming off of back-to-back losses against an inferior team in Cleveland, I like Buffalo at quote-unquote home. Across Lake Michigan. Is that Lake Michigan? I'm sorry, my geography in that area, the Great Lakes. I'm a little off, so you'll have to let it slide if I've completely named the wrong lake that it's across. But nonetheless, I like Buffalo in Detroit against Cleveland.
Yeah, like Buffalo as well here, and I think they're going to just stay in Detroit because they're playing the Lions.
No, they're not. Yeah, apparently they're going back to Buffalo is what I heard this morning. So yeah,
it's 250 miles from Detroit to Buffalo, so I guess you can bus back. Or I don't know if the airport's going to be open. Who knows? But I like Buffalo in this situation. They tend to bounce back after those tough losses, and Cleveland seems to be just waiting for Deshaun Watson. So I'll go with the Bills as well.
All right, next we have Chicago at Atlanta. Chicago's playing some pretty good football lately. Atlanta's always good to play spoiler, but it's not going to be this week. It's going to be Chicago, I think, on the road taking care of business. So give me the Bears.
I'm with you with the Bears. Justin Fields has been playing outstanding football the last month. He's from Georgia. I think he goes home and beats the Atlanta Falcons.
All right, next, Carolina at Baltimore. Baltimore at home against a very bad Carolina Panthers team. I like Baltimore in this one pretty easily.
Yeah, should be a pretty simple game for Baltimore. Get up early and put the pressure on whoever the hell is quarterbacking for Carolina. Supposed to be Baker Mayfield. So I think Baltimore wins handily.
Next, Washington at Houston. Washington very quietly is 4-1 in their last five games. I like them to go to 5-1 in their last six games with a win on the road against Houston, who, you know, again, Houston is Houston. They've been the same type of team the last handful of years, and that's who they are. So give me Washington, and I think it'll be a close game, but I still like Washington to win this one.
In a bizarre situation, I keep picking the Texans to pull off upsets. I'll pick them again because eventually, you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day. So I like the Texans to pull off the upset. I think Washington might be a little flat after an emotional win at Philadelphia on Monday. Short turnaround. Now you go to Houston. I'll take the Texans in an upset.
All right. The Raiders at Denver. This was a painful game to pick because I really don't think either team can win. Like, I really don't. But when push comes to shove, I will take the Raiders because they don't have Russell Wilson, and I do like their team a little bit better. Not that that's saying much, but yeah, give me the Raiders on the road.
Yeah, I'll go with the Raiders here. Yeah, you know, Josh McDaniels got that vote of confidence from owner Mark Davis, which I think I agree with you 100%. They just can't afford to fire him and have John Gruden and Josh McDaniels earning whatever $17 million a year while not coaching. So I'll take the Raiders. I think they'll bounce back after an emotional loss to Indianapolis last week.
All right, next, pretty big game, Dallas at Minnesota. I like Minnesota at home in this one. Dallas again. I think Dallas, they're a pretty good team, but they have issues of their own at times, and certainly they're not the most consistent. We saw that obviously last week against the Packers, blowing that big lead late. So this is a tough bounce back for them against Minnesota, a team that's playing pretty well and tends to win a lot of these close games. So give me Minnesota.
I'll take Dallas. I think their pass rush will put pressure on Cousins, will force them into turnovers. I'll take the Dallas Cowboys, who are a 1.5-point favorite on the road at Minnesota. So I think that maybe tells you a little bit something. I'll take the Cowboys.
Next, Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. Years past, it was probably a pretty big game. Well, not really, because Cincinnati wasn't really good when Pittsburgh was. I like Cincinnati on the road. Again, these are games that good teams tend to win, and I think Cincinnati's pretty good, and Pittsburgh is not. Although having TJ Watt back in the mix is a huge deal. I think Cincinnati does enough to win, so Bengals on the road.
Yeah, the Steelers upset the Bengals in week one when the Bengals couldn't kick an extra point to win the game or a short field goal.
Joe Burrow
threw
five interceptions.
He did. He sure did. But he's played pretty well since, so I'm going to take the Bengals in this game. It's a big game for them because, you know, they can't fall too far behind Baltimore because that would put them in a very difficult situation trying to be a wild card. And as you detailed earlier, Ian, there's a bunch of teams that are in this group that are going to fight for those wild card spots.
All right. One of them is the Los Angeles Chargers, although very, very mediocre. They do host the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday Night Football this week, and early in their season, they lost the Chiefs, and these two teams tend to split every season. So mm-hmm. I'm gonna play the odds and say that somehow the Chargers win this game. And look, they have issues. They've certainly underwhelmed, but they're not a bad team. That's the difference between them and the other two teams in the AFC West. The other two teams are bad. Denver and Las mm-hmm. Vegas, they're bad. The Chargers are just spectacularly mediocre. Okay? So that means, well, sometimes they can flash some greatness. Most of the times, though, they're just kind of just going through the motions. I think they eke out a win here just because, again, division opponents, they tend to split every season. And like I said, I mean, Kansas City's vulnerable. They've had some instances where it's like they've almost tried to give games away and somehow, you know, squeaked away with it. Well, I know why, but, you know, the difference here is I think the Chargers will end up getting the better of them here, but I tend to be pretty wrong most of the time every week when I make game picks, so take it for what it's worth. Give me the Chargers at home.
I want to pick the Chargers because, as you said, they always split with Kansas City. The games are wildly entertaining. The Chargers just have way too many injuries. Kansas City's pretty well focused right now. I think they'll get the job done. I'll take the Chiefs.
All right. That's going to do it for us here today on a Friday edition of the Full Press or FBC Radio Live. Stay tuned or tune in on Sunday for Full Press NFL Sunday with myself and Braden. Assuming Twitter is still alive, folks, we will be broadcasting at Full Press Radio and, of course, all across Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and all that fun stuff. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and we will talk to you soon.